some of these teams who are pushing players really aggressively, I imagine it makes them much more appealing landing spots in the draft when you're sitting there and the Angels are up next and you're a college player. You're like, hey, sign me up. I'm trying to get to the big leagues immediately.
Hello, everybody. It's the Hot Sheet Show. JJ Cooper, Carlos Collazo, Jeff Ponce here. We are talking. We got everything. We got opening days, more opening days than we can count. We had Major League opening day. We had AAA opening day. Soon we're going to have the rest of full season minor league opening day. We'll celebrate the ACL and the FCL and the DSL opening day while we're at it. We're going to get into a lot of it today. We're going to start by talking about the draft. But most importantly, before you do that, they're all there now. If you go to Baseball America's YouTube channel, which you're pretty much, I think you can find it if you're watching us on the stream, our prospect profiles are up there for all 30 teams now. So check out our prospect profile on the number one prospect in each and every organization on the Baseball America YouTube channel. We're getting ready to talk draft, so let's hit the first move. So, Carlos, a little bit bleary-eyed because, you know, the draft rankings updates as a never-ending process. You're watching a lot of games. You're out this weekend checking out Stanford. But we have updated draft rankings, and I would start by asking this question. We also have a staff draft today. Jamie Arnold is our new number one, the FSU left-hander. But in the staff draft, you went a different direction. Is this possibly the time that we're going to see the thing that can never be done actually done? Could we see a high school right-hander taken 1-1?
If there's going to be a year for that, I think we're kind of having the stars aligned for it in this year's draft class. I mean, Seth Hernandez, who's right-handed pitcher at Corona High School, as you mentioned, I had the first pick in our staff draft, our first of the year. I promise I did not give myself that pick intentionally. It was a randomized order. But for me, when I'm looking at the top of this draft class, and Jeff kind of jokingly mentioned it to me last week, man, there's really no obvious number one player in the class. We're still struggling with that. It's a bit of a hassle. Every time I talk with scouts at Fields or on the phone, especially for the teams picking up inside the top 10, they're like, hey, who do you have up top? We don't have a very clear favorite in this range. There's a huge swath of players still being considered. None of the college players who are positioned at the top of the board have really grabbed that number one status with any conviction. Even Jamie Arnold, who kind of moved into that spot as the de facto number one in our most recent update, his last few weeks have not been the most dominant. I think there are a lot of cracks you can poke in all of the college profiles at the top of the class. We don't have any pure hitters like Travis Bazana. A lot of our top college hitters you see here at Ivar Arquette, Marquise, and Dean Curley, they're all right-handed hitters. Last year, we had a lot of left-handed hitters that teams really prefer, all other things being equal. And as I was going into this staff draft with the number one overall pick, I'm just looking at, okay, what player has the most upside here in this 1-1 spot? And I really do think that's Seth Hernandez. He's a high school pitcher who's been up to 100. He's got a 70-grade changeup, maybe the best changeup in the class. He has two legitimate breaking balls that could become above-average or plus pitchers. He's a great athlete. So I think in terms of upside, if the Nationals wanted to go that direction, his talent is equivalent with any of the players we're talking about here. It's easier to do that in a staff draft than a mock draft because it hasn't happened. But you look at guys like Jackson Job, Hunter Green, who have gone near that range in recent years, I think those picks stack up pretty well. So I wonder if this is the year we'll just throw a risk to the wind and take a high school ready.
So that's the thing that stands out to me is normally when you talk about something like this, you say, oh, you can never take a high school right-hander at the top of the class. Like, it's too risky. It's just, you're crazy if you even think about it. But I would point out with that is that because everyone's now kind of factoring in that risk, Carlos, like, as you said, like the track record has actually gotten a lot better because almost no one ever does it. So the only reason you would do it is because you really, really like this pitcher. It used to be a guy threw hard, really hard. He'd be at the top of the class. Now that's not really the case anymore. But with this, like, is this maybe an opening for an Ethan Holliday to be 1-1? Because again, the college guys in this class, there's a lot of guys that seems like that teams like, but it's hard to find that guy that teams have that 100% conviction in at the top of the draft.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you could say that Ethan Holliday has the best hitting and power combination in the class, high school or college. I think with Holliday, he's a player that you don't really have the same sort of lever to pull in the spring in terms of affecting his draft stock, what he does against his prep competition. It's not going to materially change his profile. Now, if he came out with a significantly different tool set, maybe that would change the profile. But everything we've heard so far this spring is Ethan Holiday is kind of the player that we saw last summer. He was already number two on our board entering the year in conversation to go in that 1-1 spot. And I think in terms of his upside potential and maybe like the perceived floor, just given his track record as a hitter in this high school class for years now, would maybe think, okay, that's a little bit safer than a high school right-hander. Typically, the elite high school college or high school hitters in a class, I should say, the track record of those players is pretty good in general. So that wouldn't shock me either. I think there's maybe 10 players who still have a legitimate case to go in that one spot.
Jeff, is there anyone who jumps out to you at the top of this class that you're like, okay, why aren't we talking about this guy?
Not really. I mean, honestly, I focus most of my work on the pro side of things. But I think the thing that's astonishing to me is just how quickly the conversation around 1-1 has just transitioned almost like on a week-to-week basis, it feels like, throughout this draft cycle. And that's like what I was joking about with Carlos, you know, last week was just it feels like he hasn't had sort of like a standard, you know, maybe like top 2 to 3 options sort of draft like we've seen in, you know, years past, the last like 2 years or so. Just like nobody from the college side has performed hitter or pitcher in a manner that is, you know, sort of made themselves into a position to be like, yeah, this is a no doubt sort of safe top of the class kind of pick. And I think the other thing I'll throw back at Carlos too is just how much has maybe some of the recent underperformance with top college hitters in particular taken in the top 10 picks maybe impacted, you know, some of the warning signs that scouts and front office people maybe see through a bad stretch that maybe gets them a little bit more worried than it might have 3, 4, 5, 6 years ago.
Yeah, I wonder how much of it is just the college offensive environment is so loud. It creates so much more noise in the last few years than we've seen in the past. So like, I've talked to a lot of scouts, and this is not necessarily like a critique of the top of the class college hitters typically, but I could easily see it maybe impacting them as well. But there are a lot of college hitters who are not legitimately pro prospects that are putting up crazy numbers. So I do think if you're supermodel driven, maybe there's just a lot more noise and a lot more refining of the data and the performance that you might have to do to have confidence. So maybe that's something, and you don't have that as much on the high school side. But it's going to be interesting to figure out who's going at the top of this year's class.
For all the talk about torpedo bats, like the bats that really we should be talking about are the college bats, because we are seeing like, okay, you may have thought that Yankees Brewers, you know, those home run, that game was crazy. We're seeing that every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday in college baseball right now. We're sitting here at Major League Baseball's at like 4.2 runs per game, I think, right now. College baseball's flirting with 7. You know, it's something where, like Carlos said, the offensive environments are really high up here. And by the way, we got a good question here from who asking, who has the highest floor, Carlos, in your opinion, to be safe 1-of-1? If you're going to go reduce the risk, who's the high floor option here?
I do think that's Jamie Arnold, and that might be part of the reason why he's just in that one spot. I mean, this is a pitcher who a lot of scouts think could be in the major leagues a year from now. He has done it in one of the better conferences in college baseball. You don't have to project too much on him. He's got a really solid track record of throwing strikes at a high level. He's a college left-handed pitcher who has 2+ pitches now. The changeup is a pitch that metrically has looked really impressive. Just behind the plate, it's looked really impressive. So I think you can look at him and say he has a chance to be a pretty safe middle of the rotation arm. I think of him in almost a similar profile as like a Rhett Lauder, just a really advanced college pitcher, maybe not the same sort of pure upside as a Chase Burns or Hagen Smith, but with less of the risk that those pitchers had a year ago as well in terms of just starter profile. So he would probably be the guy that I point to. On the high school side, I mean, maybe it's just Cason Cunningham, who is a Texas shortstop, and maybe the one hitter in this class that you could feel comfortable putting a 6 hit on. At the same time, you're talking about floor. It feels like maybe a stretch to go with any of the high school players, but that really pure hitting high school track record has done a fairly nice job in the past. So those would be two on the college and high school side that I would point to if you're looking for floor that I would feel comfortable with.
It's going to be interesting. We'll keep talking about it. But we also want to remind you that you can stream live MLB games through the FanDuel Sports Network. And if you use promo code BASEBALL30, that's BASEBALL30, you can start it off with a 30-day extended free trial at FanDuelSportsNetwork.com/packages. You can see teams including the Tigers, the Royals, the Angels, the Marlins, the Brewers, the Cardinals, the Rays, and the Reds offer expires 5/2/25, 1999 a month after the free trial. Cancel during your free trial to avoid any charges. Eligibility restrictions apply. Visit FanDuelSportsNetwork.com for details. So we also, before we leave the draft, anything else, Carlos, that jumped out to you from the staff draft that, you know, like any little insights that you got for that? Check that out at BaseballAmerica.com. We did the top 40 picks, which includes a pick for each and every team, because if you go to 40, you get the teams that don't have first rounders. So, but anything else that really jumped out to you?
Yeah, I think, you even see this when you read the rationale of the writers, but when you're picking at the top, there's a lot of anxiety because you're not sure who exactly is the name you should be picking. You want to slam dunk. But as we move throughout the middle of the first round into the 20s, into the 30s, I'm really struck by the quality of the players who are still on the board. I was still really excited about a lot of the players that I had a chance to grab, the players who were going around me. And so I think, and again, this is what I've heard while talking with scouts out at the field, teams that are picking in the middle and the back of the first round, teams that have multiple picks, are really excited about this year's draft class because the depth is so solid. There's a chance they're not taking talents that are much different than players going inside the top 10 range. And you feel much better about those talents when you're taking them at 18 or 20. And then you have teams like the Orioles and the Brewers and the Royals who are picking multiple times within the top 40. They've got a lot of pool money to work with. So I think those teams are actually quite happy with the composition of this year's draft. There are a lot of interesting college bats in that range. The pitching depth, the left-handed pitching depth on the high school and the college side in particular is exciting. There are a ton of high school shortstops that I'd be really intrigued with. So I think teams who are picking in the back half or maybe middle of the first round and later are actually pretty excited with this draft. That's what stands out to me.
Again, there's a lot to digest with the draft, but we've also had the start of the major league season. Our number one prospect, Roky Sasaki, 2 starts, 4.2 innings, a little bit fewer, 5.79 ERA, a little bit fewer maybe we want. So it's a time for the scouting report presented by FanDuel Sports Network. So Jeff, how worried should we be? I mean, it's only 2 starts, but Roky Sasaki so far has not exactly dominated. I think it's fair to say. How worried, if you're a Dodgers fan or just a fan of prospect, how worried should we be about Roky Sasaki?
Yeah, I think like the long-term outlook and perspective that you have is that we always thought there were going to be some things that he sort of had to figure out once he came stateside, just in terms of, you know, how to execute, you know, against major league hitters, you know, the type of lineups, the type of pitches he was going to have to throw. He's coming off an injury plagued year where the performance had gone down a little bit. It was all part of that, you know, initial signing process when he was meeting with teams, just in terms of learning what their development plans might be for him. It's also, you know, in the Dodgers' hands, and they've done a good job of, you know, getting the most out of almost every pitcher that's come through, the Dodgers over the last, 5, 6, 7, 8 years of this run. I think you got to put some faith into that. In the short term, I do think it's a little bit concerning. You know, this is a 23-year-old kid kind of thrust into, you know, the limelight, but also being put onto, you know, one of the best teams assembled, I think at least in my lifetime, my 40 years plus here on the earth, just in terms of the overall talent and the overall talent and the pitching staff as well. You know, it's good to see that he's at least healthy. Hopefully this is just something that he can work out, and it's just, you know, an issue of adjusting to the seams or the mound height, whatever it might be something as small as that. But I think we always thought there would be some bumps in the road, particularly early when I sort of took a step back and was evaluating Roky this offseason. Doesn't change, you know, his perspective for me on him being the number one prospect or number one of the Dodgers system or anything along those lines. I don't think we should overreact like that.
I went back and I watched every pitch I could see from both the two regular season starts, but also his spring training outings. I've watched a lot of Roki in Japan before that, and obviously the World Baseball Classic. The thing that just stands out is that, I mean, it's a simple command and control question right now, and I don't have worries personally that that's like something that's going to be a long-term issue. He just cannot locate his fastball. Especially that start against the Tigers, he could not locate his fastball. You know, we talk about a little scouting term. Glove side, okay, for right-handers, the side that you hold the glove on. Arm side, you know, you're the pitching side. So everything with his fastball, he could not go glove side with his fastball, and he kept missing out of the zone arm side over and over and over. And really, the whole setup for Sasaki, the stuff was fine, but if he can't locate that, and his splitter was the same problem. He was missing splitters like that you were almost having to duck out of the way of as a right-handed hitter. That's not where a splitter should be going. I think the whole profile counts. You kind of do require with him getting ahead in counts somewhat, because you can spit on the splitter a lot more if he's behind in counts. You end up having to rely on the slider, I think, a little bit more than ideal. But Carlos, with the splitter, it's a great pitch, but do you have concerns about just how well he's commanding it?
Yeah, I think what's fascinating about pitchers that have such a splitter dominant profile is, like you said, you have to get ahead in counts for that to be effective against major league hitters. They can spit on a splitter. A splitter traditionally is a chase pitch. It's a pitch that is so effective because the velocity and movement combination is so difficult to square up. Well, for pitchers, that's hard to throw as a reliable in the zone strike offering. You look at the 26 batters he's faced, he's getting behind in the count 17 of those 26 plate appearances, and it's because he's not establishing the fastball in the zone. When you're constantly working behind and your primary swing and miss pitch is a splitter, that's not going to be a pitch that you can kind of throw when behind the count to work back in those counts. So I think it's just simply like having confidence that his fastball is good enough to where he does not need to be precise to be effective or to miss bats at the major league level. He's sitting in the upper 90s with that heater. I think you see from young pitchers, a lot of the times you go to the majors and you're so worried about being perfect and not allowing any sort of contact that you start trusting your stuff maybe a little bit less. I think he has this sort of stuff where he can just locate it in the zone, get ahead in counts, and then let that splitter go to work. But we see this for pitchers who are not named Roki Sasaki who rely on splitters. You have to have confidence and command in your fastball. I'm not too concerned that he's not going to have that moving forward. Maybe it's just him being a little bit nervous, trying to be a little bit too precise. But that's definitely going to be something to watch for. Is he getting the fastball in the zone early? Is he getting the slider in the zone early and counts to help set up that devastating splitter?
The other thing I would say to watch for when Roki makes his next start is everything kind of in on the hands of right-handers or, you know, away from lefties? The big leagues hitters are really good. You can't just basically say, I'm just going to live in this one little spot. And again, a lot of that's come back to command and control. You have to be able to kind of, though, put a threat where hitters have to cover more of the plate. He hasn't been able to do that, especially in that last start. And that kind of meant that even with his fastball, okay, his fastball is really good. But if you're only having to look in kind of one third of the plate and saying if it's not here, it's going to be a ball, then you're making the hitter's job a little bit too easy. We've seen that so far. I would actually say one thing about Jeff Point is yes, this is a great team. I think that might be an advantage for Roki Sasaki in a lot of ways here, because for all his troubles, for all his struggles, as we're talking about this, the Dodgers are 5-0. This is a team that can look at this very big picture and say, you know, if he takes a month and a half, 2 months to work out and figure it out, we're really focused on him being a Roki Sasaki who can dominate in October much more than having to worry that a rough start in April or May is going to doom their playoff chances. This team's going to the playoffs. We already know that. And so with that, they kind of have a little bit more patience, a little bit more ability to take their time, even if, let's just be honest, their AAA rotation is probably better than a number of teams' big league rotations. But Jeff, that's not the only thing that stands out. We also have had the start of the AAA. We had a little three-game teaser series in AAA, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Roman Anthony Christian Campbell may have come up to the big leagues and has already had a very impressive debut. Roman Anthony's kind of showing he kind of wants to join him as soon as he can, hasn't he?
Yeah, Willy Abreu, I think, has something to say about that based on his early performances as well. Good problem to have for the Red Sox, and kind of one that we anticipated a little bit, you know, just based on our rankings, the feedback, the looks, and the conversations we'd had within the game over the last year. But yeah, I think even here where it was 30-something degrees, he put up a 2-home-run game. So I think just to throw that little element of into the whole conversation, just the fact that it's, you know, it was sub 40 degrees here during those games all weekend and still put on and performs and, you know, makes big plays in the field and, you know, a lot of barrels. So it's pretty consistent. And, you know, outside of Anthony and Meyer, that Worcester lineup is very old. So I think he's probably going to be the next one that gets called up. If there's an injury in that outfield, I would imagine Anthony's probably the next man up.
The other thing to watch to me on the AAA rosters is Nick Kurtz made his AAA debut with the A's, Las Vegas Aviators. I guess he's getting a little sneak peek at what is supposed to be their long-term home. The thing that jumps out with that is that it used to be not that long ago that a first-round pick, a college first-round pick, if they started that next year in high A, that was just considered a normal assignment, and double A was really aggressive. Now we don't even bat an eye at a guy going to triple A because Cam Smith, also from last year's draft, is in the big leagues. And that's not even counting Ryan Johnson, who made his big league debut having never actually pitched in the minors for the Angels. It is amazing how fast the speed of development is, especially on the college side. Carlos, kind of with that, have you kind of gotten kind of used to this, or is it still a little shocking when you see guys that you were at this time last year kind of worrying about where they were going to line up in the draft, like a Cam Smith, and here he is, he's already a big leaguer?
Yeah, it's definitely shocking, especially when it's players like Cam Smith. Who is Cam Smith any more advanced as a hitter compared to Nick Kurtz or Travis Bezzana or JJ Weatherholt? I don't necessarily think he is. So some of these teams who are pushing players really aggressively, I imagine it makes them much more appealing landing spots in the draft when you're sitting there and the Angels are up next and you're a college player. You're like, hey, sign me up. I'm trying to get to the big leagues immediately. For the Angels, it's not shocking at all at this point. They've been doing it for so long. But I do think still, even with players going as quickly as Cam Smith, like, It almost has to feel shocking. Just we've been so normalized, like you have to go through the minor leagues and kind of earn your stripes a little bit. But no, I mean, teams are letting colleges do a lot of the heavy lifting from a development side over the last few years, and we're seeing it so frequently. At some point, it's got to stop being surprising.
We are seeing it over and over again. It is something where the speed of this is kind of, again, we're doing a piece for Baseball America about predicting the 2026, who will be the number one prospect in each and every organization. And when it got to the Angels picked two. So you would say that very logically, the Angels' number two pick should be a very good chance to be their number one prospect next year, whoever that pick is, as we just talked about. Could be a lot of different players. But if they take a college guy, I can't feel comfortable that player is going to be still eligible at this time next year. I mean, you know, he might be up and already graduated before we get around to this. So it is the challenges we face ranking prospects nowadays that we never used to face in the past. But we do want to remind you again that you can stream live MLB games through FanDuel Sports Network. And if you use the promo code Baseball30, that's Baseball30, you can start it off with a 30-day extended free trial at FanDuelSportsNetwork.com/packages. Teams include the Tigers, the Royals, the Angels, the Marlins, the Brewers, the Cardinals, the Rays, the Reds. Offer expires 5/2/25, $19.99 a month after the free trial. Cancel during your free trial to avoid any charges. Eligibility restrictions apply. Visit FanDuelSportsNetwork.com for details. So we appreciate you joining us here on the Hot Sheet Show. By the way, we do want to give you a little heads up that we have a new show also coming to the Baseball America YouTube channel. Jeff and I will be the main ones. We're going to talk prospects again. If you enjoyed this, we're going to talk prospects every Wednesday. We'll post that every Wednesday as well, starting it off with the minor league season. I'm sure Carlos will make an appearance there. I'm sure we'll have many others. But we want to remind you of that. We also want to remind you prospect profiles over on the Baseball America YouTube channel. We have them up for all 30 teams. Please like and share this video. Subscribe, click the bell so you can get notifications. And if you're listening to this as a podcast, again, we appreciate it there. Make sure you subscribe to get all these podcasts. But also, you know, if you could, leave us a favorable review on your favorite podcast provider. That also helps other people get to see this as well. For Jeff, for Carlos, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.